Thanks very much, Femi. And another headline this week is that there were proposals to close dozens of Catholic schools in New York City and Miami. Across the country, Catholic schools are failing as enrollment plunges, though in rare places, enrollment is actually on the rise. So why are so many failing and some are succeeding? To help answer that question, with us here in the studio is Brenda Becker, a writer from Brooklyn whose daughter has spent 9 years in Catholic schools, and Bob Vobrill, the superintendent of schools for the Diocese of Wichita, Kansas. So we welcome both of you.
Thank you.
Brenda, I'm going to start with you. Lay out some of the issues that you believe are affecting Catholic schools and really contributing to the downward spiral of enrollment.
Well, starting from first principles, if you are a believing Catholic, this system is very important to you because it literally creates the next generation of Catholics. Ours is a challenging faith. It's the single most effective way. And these are also schools that are the heart and soul of their parishes, their communities. So my question is, if we're literally on a mission from God, then why haven't our church leaders, our bishops, been acting more like the Blues Brothers, doing the backflips down the middle of the church, dancing on the diner counter?
There's a vision.
Doing anything they can to make the system work. And instead, the management style that I've seen has been right up there with a bunch of Chrysler executives in terms of nimbleness, innovation, vision. How hard have they really tried?
And Bob, how do you respond to that kind of criticism?
How can you respond? I think that Catholic schools in the United States are at a crossroads. I agree with that. And I think the choice is whether Catholic schools will be an instrument to form young people in faith or whether they will continue to go down a road where only the upper middle income and upper class can afford to be a part of Catholic schools. And obviously, I would hope that Catholic schools would choose to be primarily a mission of the church to form kids in the faith.
But, Bob, the bottom line is the cost of Catholic schools and certainly the economy are contributing factors, but the Catholic Church really has some serious challenges in front of it. You're dealing with the aftermath of the sexual abuse scandal, and there is this disillusionment that me being growing up in a Catholic household, I hear a lot from Catholics, and you read about it a lot, that many feel that the church was slow to react to changes in society and that the church has been unwilling to admit problems, and that has discouraged Catholic families from sending their children to Catholic schools.
I don't find that in the middle of the country. What I find is that for most people, the Catholic Church is their parish. And so in our mind here, we feel that if the parish is providing good service to the families of the parish, and in our case at least providing Catholic education for those families, then the issues that are facing the world at large or the church at large don't press as heavily on them. Because they see.
But let me just stop you right there, though. But how do you explain then enrollment in 1960 was 5.2 million students? In 2008, it was 2 million students.
Do we have about 2 days to answer that question?
But how would you sum that up?
Well, I think the main challenge that today's families face is that in 1960 or in the 50s when I was in grade school, the teachers were all sisters, and a Catholic education was affordable for everybody. Today, the cost of an education is in our world here, $4,000 to $5,000 for elementary schools, and $8,000 to $10,000 for high schools, and no family can afford to pay the full cost of that themselves.
And let's bring Brenda into this conversation because you have a child in the schools. Is it just about the money, Brenda?
I am so not sold on that excuse. Here in New York City, we're told parents can't afford the tuition. We have two different options besides Catholic schools. One is free, that's the public schools, and one is our private schools, which cost about $30,000 a year. And there's what I call the lawn chair scenario. We've all seen it on the news. People are camping out in pup tents at midnight to get online for a new public charter school, to line up to register for some pricey private school with a huge waiting list. So is there no demand for something in the middle? Of course there is.
So what is Bob not addressing, Brenda, that you would like answers to?
Well, our Brooklyn Diocese is calling their program of shutting down the schools preserving the vision. It's an Orwellian term that implies that they're strengthening them for the future. But what they're actually doing is preserving a vision, to me, of the 1950s, when the parents were Irish and Italian, the families were big, the nuns worked for free, and all was good. Well, that's not the product, and that's not the world anymore. So innovate. If you're on a mission from God, figure out what's going to work for tomorrow. People are hungry for the message. They're hungry for the product. What are they doing wrong that they're not making it work? And the answer is they're not doing much of anything except just waiting around like Starbucks. Oops, we opened too many. Better
shut
them down.
And we're going to let Bob respond to that. But actually, Bob, you are involved down there in Wichita in an innovative program of trying to recruit new students. Would you say this is your way of addressing this changing environment that we live in?
Well, we believe that at the heart of this question is whether it is the parish's responsibility to provide for a Catholic education or whether it's the responsibility of the individual family to fund the whole thing. And we believe, really, I agree with Brenda, to the extent that Catholic schools are the best way to provide a Catholic education for young people. And if that's true, then a church has a vested interest in making that education available and affordable to as many families as possible.
And do you think that the church has made that a priority? Have Catholic schools made that a priority and expressed that to those communities? I mean, there are almost 65 million Catholics in the United States. Has that been expressed to the entire Catholic community?
Yes, the bishops have made two statements in the last 20 years as a conference, saying that Catholic schools are the best means available for the education of young people. But where most dioceses face challenges is how to fund the education if the families themselves can't.
And so really for you, it certainly does boil down to some funding issues. And Brenda, I'm going to let you have the final word here quickly.
I think the system has to be economically diverse. If they buffed up the product, they'd pull in upper-middle-class parents, and they could support more scholarships because every upper-middle-class parent wants to say their kid sits next to a poor kid.
I want to thank both of you. Obviously, Bob, as you noted, this is a conversation we could have for about 4 days straight, day and night, but we thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Brenda Becker is a writer. Her daughter has spent 9 years in the Brooklyn Catholic Diocese Schools. And Bob Vobrill, Superintendent of Schools for the Catholic Schools in Wichita, Kansas.
So we'll take you to physics class. If high school physics doesn't cut it, you really need to think about quantum theory when you've got atoms to teleport. Here's your takeaway.
Newton works well for baseballs, for planets, for stars, but his math just fails when you apply it to tiny things.
Tiny things. Columbia University's Brian Green deals with big issues. He's a professor of mathematics and physics, talking about the movement of particles between atoms. Here's another takeaway from the New York Times' Mark Landler.
As tough as the Arab-Israeli issue is, the portfolio that Holbrooke has been handed is even more difficult.
Holbrooke drew the worst envoy job yesterday. He's President Obama's envoy to Pakistan and Afghanistan, one of the foreign policy issues on the table. Barack Obama can still text Richard Holbrooke. He's keeping his BlackBerry. But in the midst of this economic crisis, people are resetting their lives, reflecting on what's most important to them. If you could text the president, what would it be? 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytakeatthetakeaway.org.
I'm Adora Udoji.
And I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.